Welcome back to Literacy Lunch Break. I'm your host, Marjorie Botardi, and I am so excited for this episode. We are going to delve into the world of structured literacy and its profound impact on English language learners and bilingual students. Join us as we engage in a thought-provoking conversation with Lucia Rocha Nessler, an expert in the field of biliteracy education. Explore the power of the science of reading and discover how it fosters equity and empowers students in bilingual classrooms, ensuring a brighter... Thank you so much for joining us, Lucia. I think we can just jump in and maybe just give us a little background to tell us a little bit about yourself, your experience in education.
Yeah, thanks, Marjorie, so much. I'm very excited to be here with you as well. What can I tell you about myself? I've been an educator for, I think this is my 20th year, and I've spent all of my classroom experience as a dual language teacher in some capacity. I spent most of my teaching career in kindergarten, second, third, and just a few years ago was in a fourth grade classroom teaching, which was incredible, of course.
Nice. I was also an instructor. You have there, right?
Yeah. I was also an instructional coach. I worked as a staff developer, supporting mostly bilingual and dual language classrooms and programs across the country and internationally. And I was also part of the Stanford University Graduate School of Education, where I was really fortunate to support bilingual teacher candidates. So teachers that were getting ready to become teachers. And I guess what I would call my most important job is that I'm also a mom raising multilingual children. And I grew up learning English as a new language myself. I actually didn't speak any English until I got to kindergarten. And to this day in my home, we speak Spanish as our first and I like to say only language, although my kids, now that they're a little bit older, might disagree. I'm still very much, you know, it's my passion, not just in the area of my work, but also in just who I am as a person.
Yeah, and that's amazing. And I think that's so important, right? Because that's where the passion comes from. That's where that continued learning and growth comes from as well. Yeah. So talking about, like, you've had an amazing variety of experience, and I think that's so important for education, right? You've taught those foundational grades, you've even taught fourth grade, you've served in a role of supporting teachers and leading teachers. As we think about science of reading, we know that's gained a lot of traction. You know, it's always been here, but it's really been a conversation more recently. The last few years, we've really seen that traction in the science of reading, which is amazing. But as we think about that, you know, in just that monolingual English setting, that looks very different when we think about the dual language, bilingual setting. There's a lot of different schools of thought, you know, as we look at, you know, professionals and leaders in that dual language world. And so I would love to hear just a little bit from you as you think about structured literacy and what that means for dual language or bilingual classrooms?
Yeah, what a great question. And you're totally
big
right.
Question, right?
It's a really big question. And I guess my first thing that comes to mind is I don't understand the pushback. And that's the first thing that I always have personal problem, not problem, issues with, I guess, in terms of like, where does the pushback come from? Right. We're talking about two languages that are governed by an alphabet principle structure. And we're talking about kids who are learning how to read and write with a brain that's made up of similar structures. Like your brain is not different than my brain. It's just not like I wish I could be like, yes, Marjorie, it is. It's not. So in that sense, like I think we can all agree that those two things haven't changed. Mm-hmm. And you're also talking about languages with extensive research on how the brain learns to read, regardless of language. And the findings are really similar. So meaning, you know, you have people leading the work of structured literacy, and people will say, but it's only been done in English. But that's untrue. That's untrue. There's been extensive research done around structured literacy in Spanish, in Spanish-speaking countries with monolingual Spanish-speaking children. So, and it's not, like you said, it wasn't like it just happened.
Right.
One of my most prized, a woman that I look up to extensively, her name is Ana Maria Borsone. She's a researcher out of Argentina. She's been doing this work for 50 years.
Oh my goodness, yes. See, and that, I mean, and as you talk about the similarities, it's that same with the English, right? Like, oh no, oh, this isn't new. This has been here. And yeah. And that access, part of it is that access to research, right? Mm-hmm. As educators, where do we get access to all of this research? When do we find time to sift through the research and make it comprehensible? And I think that's why I'm excited to have guests like you join the podcast, because we know how busy teachers are, right? And somebody might be listening right now and being like, what? There's research that states this? I've always heard there isn't anything. So the fact that, yes, and I love, love, love the way you said, our brains are the same, right? That process for reading, while that orthography might be different, that print might be different, right? What are we doing when we decode? That blending, that segmenting. Mm-hmm. And I always like to say, especially for Spanish, right? When we substitute, that's how we're making new syllables. So, you know, in the sounds and the print, while that print might be different, the process for reading is the same, and it's not natural in English and it's not natural in Spanish. And I think
that's
an important.
And I think the other thing that's really important is, like, if anything, what we gain is that, like, the research shows us that kids should generally be able to learn the code much easier in Spanish.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But here's the big but, is that we aren't necessarily seeing that transpire into more literate children in Spanish.
Oh, yeah.
So this is where I don't understand the pushback. It's not like we can say, but look, we're doing these other things that aren't structured literacy, and we're getting these amazing results.
Yeah.
Because we're not.
Yeah, that's very powerful.
We're not. Yeah. You have Spanish-speaking countries whom are still illiterate.
Right.
And it's not just, I mean, then we can go into, like, oh, it's the economics, et cetera. But again, we also have, we're still just talking about a similar brain and that works, and a process and processes that work similarly. And we're not seeing these, like, these huge gaps and, like, look, in Spanish, the kids are able to do this incredible work versus the work that we're seeing in English. It's pretty comparable.
Yeah, that's really powerful, because that's something that I don't think we talk about much, right? Is when I was a literacy coach, I worked in a dual language school district. And, you know, as we talked about the dual language classrooms, that was the constant, like, on repeat. You know, it's just easier in Spanish. It's transparent. We know, you know, like, and yes, that makes sense. But at no point was I thinking, yeah, so then why aren't we seeing those results, right? And from a dual language side, you know, you're teaching English, you're teaching Spanish, but when you're saying, no, even in Spanish-speaking countries, when that's the only language, we're not seeing that transfer. And so again, it comes back to, like, these are just not optional skills, right? When we look at structured literacy, when we look at science of reading, this is not optional. And I always like to say, like, as you're talking about the brain, it's not that some students learn to read a different way and that process is different, and some learn a whole different way. Some students pick up on it a lot easier without explicit instruction, but we know that most students need it.
That's right. Well, and when you think about dual language kids, if you have a true dual language program, then my question is always, by when are you expecting that kids are not just bilingual? And I think oftentimes the pushback comes from this idea of, like, oral language or a seat, which my goodness, I will be the first to say, and you will agree, like oracy, oral language development is incredibly important, but that's not going to make me a better reader.
You got it. Yes, absolutely. So, and again, cross, right? It's the foundation. We need that oral language. We need oracy, but you know, it's what I typically say, even just in one language, English, Spanish, any language, right? You can read to your children, and we talk about the importance of reading to students and or children, and that is so powerful because it develops oral language, the structure of language, vocabulary, but it does not teach students how to crack that code. It does not teach them how to decode or encode, right? It's building a foundation, but that doesn't replace explicit instruction.
It does not. And I think for dual language kids, it's even doubly important because at some point, whether you're following a 50-50 program or a 90-10 program, whatever it is, you still have like, oh, and also you're expecting that your kids are learning how to read at some point in English. Right. I hope that's your goal. Please tell me that's your goal, right? But how was that then going to happen if they didn't learn how to read in Spanish, which is supposed to be, according to, you know, everyone, easier, and it's not easy, then how and when do I then add on English, which has a much more complex orthography? Right. Spanish is equally, I like to say Spanish is equally challenging, especially when we're talking about encoding.
Yeah.
We talked about a lot about decoding, but Spanish has some really tricky things in terms of encoding also. Right. So if kids might be able to decode really quickly because they learn the code, but that doesn't just transfer over to encoding.
And I love that you said that because that's often the, if they can read it, they can spell it. No.
Nope. Not at all.
Not true. And I think any teacher that's, watched a student, like you just said, they read fluently, they're automatic, but then you look at their writing and you're going, oh my goodness, what's happening? Because there are so many other pieces that go into that encoding. And I think that's a really important piece. I love your very specific questions. And I just almost wonder in dual language settings and in bilingual classrooms, how often are we asking those questions? By when? Like what are our expectations of like, this is the end goal and how are we ensuring that our students are getting there? Because again, coming from a very large dual language district, I could tell you all about the oracy. I could tell you all about the vocabulary
100%.
And the importance of all of that. And sitting in a session and having somebody tell me like, well, we're reading this book and this is the content. And so, let's look, what do the words have? Oh, it looks like here's a digraph. So now we're going to teach digraphs, like, because it's, in service of the content. And I remember sitting there going like, I know I'm not bilingual. I know I'm not a dual language teacher, but I don't understand how that works. How do we just, kind of pick and choose what we're teaching without like really following a scope and sequence?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I sometimes have, trouble, I'll call it trouble with even in the term dual language.
Yeah.
Like it's a big focus on language, but the real goal should be not just language. It should be biliteracy.
Yes.
And again, oftentimes we're like, oh, we're dual language. Oh, we're dual language. We hyper focus on that language part. And I don't know, I guess we believe that kids will learn how to read and write by keeping the language alive, but that shouldn't be the thing that's guiding your program,
right?
Is my point. Like you need to ground yourself into like in your program, whether it be 50-50, whether it be, simultaneous or sequential, by when and how will you know that kids are on that trajectory of not just bilingualism, but also the biliteracy part.
Yes.
Both for all of your kids, right? Not just your Spanish dominant kids, which also, by the way, I don't even think exists anymore. This idea of Spanish dominant children in the US. I just don't think there's that many of them anymore. And this idea of, you know, your monolingual English speaking kids, like you have, for both of them, for all of your kids, there should be like, this is how we are ensuring not just the bilingual part of it, but also the biliterate part of it. Like, by when?
Yes, I just love that. And I almost just like anyone listening, if you're running a program or if you're in a school, I think that's like one small shift is just that language of like shifting from dual language to, to biliterate, making sure that our students again like have that literacy focus and it's not just about that language. I love that. And then asking the question, by when, right? By when and how do we know? How do we know we're getting there? How do we know that this is happening? And what are we doing if we're not getting there? Because I think so often, and this happens again, just in education in general, we have these expectations. We know what our students need to be able to do. And then when they can't do it, we're saying, well, this, or it was that, or, just as you were saying, like, yes, there are other factors, but when we have research that tells us how our brain learns to read, I just feel like there's no excuse not to teach it. Right? Like
100%. And I again, especially in dual language programs, where you're like, kids are supposed to be making an addition. I'm not even going to call it a transition, by the way, because they're not transitioning to anything. They're adding an additional language. So as kids make that addition of literacy in that other language, whatever language it is, they have to be ready for it. And it's also, it can't be governed by, oh, by, I've worked with schools who are like, it happens, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen until third grade. And I'm like, tell me what happens magically in third grade. Please tell me the magic that happens in third grade that can't happen in second grade or first grade or even kindergarten. Because there are some kids that might come ready to add on literacy in that second language. Why can't they? Why do we become the adults? Why do the adults get to become the gatekeepers of biliteracy?
It's a phenomenal question. And going back to that, we know language is naturally acquired, right? Like you can immerse me in that
100%.
language, and I'm gonna learn how to speak it, right? So yeah, build that oral language, build that vocabulary, but why are we not then spending time on the stuff that we know isn't natural, right? That reading and writing. And again, when we really haven't seen, I remember doing this when I was in the district that I was a coach in, and just saying, where is it done really well? Because there's a lot of districts out there that are doing this, and there's a lot of, oh, it'll happen, it'll happen, it'll happen. And I'm like, where and
When
when?
and when?
I haven't seen it happen yet. And it's like, and now, stepping back, I'm like, oh, goodness gracious, like we were so balanced literacy, right? Like everything was about language and just building. And again, so important, but those foundational skills, like those are the skills that our students have to have explicitly taught, and we can build that oral language around it.
Which, by the way, you just reminded me of the research by, of that Claude Goldenberg brings up of like, and he says things like learning how to crack the code is irrelevant of language that you do it in. So I actually don't, it doesn't need to be in my stronger language. It just needs to happen. So I can't be wait, which goes back to like, what are we, why are we waiting for language? I could be teaching language and foundational skills in not your primary language or not your strong language. It doesn't, like, don't let that idea of I have to have kids who are already bilingual or who already have,
The language.
especially I see this a lot in like, 90-10, heavy 90-10 programs who you have a lot, a number of kids who are learning Spanish as a new language, and they're waiting. We're like waiting for the kids to learn Spanish because they don't have the language. And I'm like, okay, but they could still learn how to read. They could still learn how the process of taking these marks on a page, and that they correspond to a sound that we've given them a sound that to correspond to that.
Mm-hmm.
I can be doing that and also building language
right
at the same time. Like, yeah. What a concept. Right? Like, we can't be waiting around. Like,
no.
Because they also have to add on literacy in that second language.
Right. Yeah. And again, like, that's, you know, when does that happen if we're not teaching it? And what we do know in across all languages is the longer we wait, the harder it is, right? Like, building those foundational skills in those early grades, that's critical. And we wait and we wait and we wait. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, you know, here, like you said, what happens in that magical third grade classroom is,
yeah, I'm not sure. I'm still waiting for the magic.
What research shows us is if they don't have these skills by now, like, that's a hard transition, right? And so, and I remember being in a different district with, you know, sheltered classrooms in third and fourth grade and going, oh my goodness, right? They mm-hmm. were, and this was more transitional, right? Now, thankfully, we're embracing and we know the importance of learning more than one language and yeah. how powerful that is. And just in general, to be able to speak multiple languages, but also for our brains, how much better that is for our yeah. brains. But this was transitional. And I just remember being like, okay, so we have all these third graders. And all we're noticing is, like you said, they can't read in English or Spanish.
Or right? Spanish.
They can't write right. in English or Spanish. Mm-hmm. And now they're in third grade, right? And now and now all of that instruction is shifting. So, so absolutely critical.
Yeah. Like, well, I think, oh my God, I know. I think the thing is, we could talk about this forever, but back to your original question of, you know, what's different between Spanish and English and the importance of teaching foundational skills in Spanish is that another thing that we've learned from the research is that, if anything, kids in Spanish also have to become, when we're thinking about decoding, they have to be able to be precise and fluent much faster than they do in English. And why? Well, because we have tons of multisyllabic words.
Yeah.
So we have to make sure that they're able to decode with both precision and fluency much quicker than I would say in English. Like, we don't have CVC, simple CVC words.
Yes. Yeah. See, that now that was brand new learning for me, because I always say, yes, multisyllabic, like, it matters in both, but, like, you're right. In English, we have a ton of CVC words. And that is
we
why,
don't.
Like, when we say Spanish is a, you know, multisyllabic language, I'm like, yes, but those syllables are made of phonemes. But you're absolutely right. Most of those words, you're jumping right into that. That's a really, really great point.
Well, and think of, I'm going to give you, like, an example of, like, a very simple word, but, like, mariposa, right? It has four parts, mariposa. And let's say a kiddo is decoding mariposa, and they're great decoders, we're going to call it, but they don't have precision nor fluency. They can decode mariposa till they're blue in the face, and if they don't do it with fluency and precision, they're like, I still don't know what that word is.
That is exactly. Yep. Mm-hmm. That makes a whole lot of sense. Yep. That
and there's tons of them, right? Like, right. There's so many words with three or more syllables. So it's more than just learning syllables. It's also being really good at decoding those
yeah,
syllables.
That
almost, yeah, it's just, it's so important as they then transition over to add on English.
Yeah. So this is, I always like to, I mean, we've talked about so much today, so this might be a hard question, but, you know, as we wrap up, I always like to just say, okay, one takeaway, right? If I'm a teacher and I'm listening to this, or I'm an administrator and I'm listening to this, and I know I need to start making shifts, I know I need to start making changes, what's, like, one key takeaway that you can say, start here, whether it's ask yourself this question or make this small shift, this is a great place to start.
What a great question. I think, you know, the first thing, as especially if you're running, you know, a dual language program, bilingual classroom, bilingual school, is to keep at the forefront. And maybe this could be, like, your starting question of, like, do we have a system, because it should be a system, set up for strong foundation in foundational skills for our children at our school.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that's, and I think that's great to start with a question and take a look and kind of see what then are those steps if your answer is no. Lucia, thank you so very much.
Yeah, as I said,
I could continue to talk to you all day, but thank you so much for joining us. I'm so grateful that our listeners got to hear from you and learn from you. We really appreciate your time today.
Likewise. Talk soon.
Be sure to subscribe and stay tuned for our upcoming episodes where we explore literacy topics in a snack-sized, easily digestible format.